You don't want this one.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I did talk to you.
I will open the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for June 16th, 2017. We have a very lengthy agenda. Our hope is to complete that within the normal period of time for this committee. But as is the tradition in Ways and Means, we will go as long as it takes. First of all, open up a work session on SB 5003, Commission for the Blind. Representative Rayfield.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 5003 is the budget bill for the Commission for the Blind. The agency's programs are focused on two main objectives, employment and independence for Oregonians who are blind or visually impaired. The agency provides employment and technology services, training, supported employment programs, and small business opportunities. The budget recommended by the Human Services Subcommittee is $21.5 million total funds, 68 positions, and 62.53 FTE. The recommended budget increases federal funds and other fund resources while decreasing general fund reliance. 60% or $3.5 million of the recommended budget is general funds, 7% or $1.5 million other funds, and 77% or $16.5 million federal funds. The budget includes $2.5 million increase in federal revenue to provide the Commission with the resources to comply with the new requirements under the Federal Workforce Investment and Opportunities Act. This increases the Federal Vocational Rehabilitation Grant Award, will allow the agency to bring on new counselors and instructors to offer technology training, job site assessment, and workplace accommodations to additional clients. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5003 be amended by the Dash 1 Amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing no objection, motion passes. Close the work session, open a work session. HB 5019, Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5019 is the budget for OLCC, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Your Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends a budget of $207,708,449 other funds and 304 positions. The recommendation assumes gross liquor sales of $1.35 billion, which includes an assumed $35.4 million generated from the 50 cent per bottle surcharge imposed by the OLCC in August of 2016. Agents' compensation is maintained at an average rate of 8.93% of sales, and the amount of revenue generated for the general fund is estimated at $326.1 million. Recommended policy option packages include limitation to accommodate bank card fees and agents' compensation on the bottle surcharge, an assumed increase in sales. Two new positions in the Retail Service Division to serve additional liquor stores approved by the OLCC. Expenditure limitation for reclassifications to allow for a more efficient utilization of existing staff resources, and additional positions to accommodate workload due to the growth in the number of marijuana license applicants and licensees. A package is also included to provide limitation and position authority that enables OLCC to begin to address responsibilities related to tracking medical marijuana pursuant to Senate Bill 1057. It is anticipated that the agency will return to the February 18 session or a meeting of the emergency board to request enforcement personnel associated with these responsibilities. Targets for the key performance measures related to marijuana regulation were also approved. Your Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5019 be amended by the Dash 1 Amendment and be reported out due pass as amended. And let me say, OLCC is planning to open a number of additional liquor stores, and we'll need to be watching that and tracking it carefully to see what impact it has on the existing stores and on the compensation for the owners of those stores. So this is something I personally will be watching closely, and I think this body will need to take a close look at it to see whether or not we've watered down the market to too great an extent. I urge your aye vote.
Discussion of the motion. Representative Wisman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just like to amend Senator Monroe's statements. I've heard from constituents in my district that they're concerned about the plans to build the 50 new stores and what the impact was. This is our selling force, and we need to be sure the selling force is to bring that money into the state is not harmed too much. And it's been a long time. We keep going up and down with the rate. I think 8.9 is too low. My family owned a Sears store, which operated on a 10%. The little Sears stores were just hardware and stuff, and they operated on a 10%. So I appreciate Senator Monroe's comments and endorsement. Thank you.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Yes, please note Senator Thompson. Motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session, HB 5021, long-term care ombudsman, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5021 is the budget bill for the long-term care ombudsman. The agency recruits and trains local volunteers to help it identify, investigate, and resolve non-abuse complaints made by or on behalf of residents in care facilities. It is also responsible for providing public guardian and conservator services to individuals who do not have relatives or friends willing or able to assume those duties. The Human Services Subcommittee approved a total budget of $7.2 million, including $6.2 million general fund and 24.5 FTE. The budget is a 3% increase from the 2015-17 legislative approved budget. The recommendations removes $600,000 general fund from the public guardian program and sets $200,000 of that reduction aside in a special purposes appropriation for potential future allocation to the program. A related budget note directs the agency to assess the program and report back to the legislature. The agency's performance measures were approved. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5021 be amended by the Dash 1 amendments and be reported out to pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Representative Stark.
Thank you, Co-Chair Devlin. Just wanted to comment. There are a lot of really robust conversations this session about restructuring this agency and in so doing creating a foster parent ombudsman and also taking the foster child ombudsman out from underneath DHS and putting it there. I really appreciate the hard work by DOJ, DHS, and LC to come up with a plan that would, I believe, would work and have broad support, but given the budget scenario, kind of got lost in the mix. So I hope in the future, as we talk about this agency, we would reconsider that.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Go to HB 5034, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5034 is the budget bill for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. DPSST provides public safety training and maintains standards for employment to over 35,000 police, fire, corrections, parole, and probation, telecommunications, and private security professionals and volunteers in Oregon. The Public Safety Subcommittee approved a budget of $61.6 million with 150 positions and 148.21 FTE. This budget is 3.1% higher than the 2015-17 legislative approved budget. 0.8% above the current service level. Although DPSST is primarily another funds agency, the subcommittee recommended eliminating two police training classes from the 2017 training calendar in order to alleviate pressure on the general fund. Basic police classes are funded through the criminal fines account, which is fungible with general fund, and this action saved $1.4 million and reduced four positions. The subcommittee also approved DPSST's key performance measures with two changes, to delete an obsolete measure and to clarify another. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5034 be amended by the Dash 1 amendments and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objections? Representative Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment that I think we're probably all acutely aware of, but this is an agency that is extremely sensitive to anything we do with PERS, with the number of people eligible to retire, and at any point, if there is a big landslide of retirees, then this agency would then be understaffed in order to be able to fill all of our legal enforcement positions out there. So as we've been doing in the past, being sensitive to that and paying attention, at times they need to come back and ask us for more assistance in order to do more classes to accommodate that need. Thank you.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session. HB 5034, Teacher Standards Practices Commission, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
38, I'm sorry.
House Bill 5038 is the budget bill for the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. The commission is responsible for licensing teachers and other educators, accrediting educator program, preparation programs, and monitoring the conduct of its licensees. The Education Subcommittee recommends a budget of $7,746,138 other funds for the commission. This continues three limited duration positions to respond to backlogs in investigation, licensing, and responding to requests for documents, technical assistance, and information via emails and phone calls, which they don't answer very much. While these limited duration positions assisted in reducing backlogs in 2015-17, they are required for the next biennium to eliminate the backlogs entirely. A position was added to address information technology needs across the agency, including development of a professional practices tracking system and online higher education program approval system. KPMs were discussed by the committee, which recommended changes to two existing measures to better reflect the functions of the agency, as well as to measure what is under its control. The subcommittee recognized the agency has a long ways to go in improving its performance, which is a primary reason for continuing the limited duration positions. The education subcommittee recommends House Bill 5038 be amended by the -1 amendment and be reported out to pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion and the commentary before the committee. Barbara. Representative Barbara Smith Warner.
Thank you, Richard. I mean, Senator Devlin. I just wanted to point out Dr. Monica Beam, the new TSPC head, who really has been doing a yeoman's job of really great work in that agency to take what had been a flashpoint for many of us in this building and really working hard and structurally to work through a lot of issues and make some significant progress going forward. I am encouraged to see what will happen in the next biennium and going forward. We talked about getting through the backlog and a lot of those other issues and really giving yourself the opportunity to take a broader look about how the agency functions overall once you kind of can get under that, out from under those circumstances. And I am very optimistic about this agency, with the work it's already done and the work it will continue to do.
Any additional discussion, Senator Thompson?
I was just, I know if we just spent like $50 a month, maybe they could install a voicemail system on their phone.
Senator Robun.
And even though he makes none of that, they do respond to 100% of those that they answer. And I have been appreciative. And they are working on all of those things. And I want to commend the department for the things they've meant, the backlogs they've done. And it has been really great working. We passed a bill earlier in the session that allows teachers to start work at the beginning of the year. If they had to hire them at the last minute and they're waiting for their license, gives them 90 days. There's some things that have been instituted because of new directions that I think are going to make it easier for all of our schools. And I appreciate that new insight, and I appreciate the fact that they've been working to get those backlogs taken care of. And as one of those people whose wife called, they got answered. It was 100%. So I have a little bit of a disagreement with them, and I will tell you that I hate answering machines because they're worse, actually. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I was just curious, does the bill contain a mechanism whereby Senator Thompson can donate $50 a month to the department?
That would be a shock.
Sure. Just curious. We can make an official inquiry on behalf of Senator Thompson.
920. Receiving gifts and grants.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Please note Senator Girod. Motion carries. Close that work session. Open the work session. HB 5044, Department of Corrections and Department of Forestry, 2015-17. Rebalance. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. HB 5044 completes legislative actions taken on behalf of Department of Corrections to address budgetary shortfalls in the 2015-17 budget and provides additional resources to Department of Forestry to pay for the insurance premium for a catastrophic wildfire insurance policy for the 2017 fire season. This bill rebalances Department of Corrections budget between divisions and provides $5 million of general fund to make up a budget shortfall remaining from the unspecified general fund reduction included in the agency's 2015-17 budget. The department has managed this shortfall through a combination of vacancy savings and spending reductions in services and supplies throughout the current biennium. HB 5044 also provides $1.7 million general fund and $1.7 million other fund expenditure limitation to Department of Forestry to purchase a catastrophic wildfire insurance policy for the 2017 fire season. Identical to the policy purchased last year, this insurance policy will provide $25 million in large fire funding coverage after a $50 million deductible. Finally, the bill removes $700,000 general fund appropriation and $800,000 other fund expenditure limitation provided to the Department of Forestry for a procurement system that will not be completed by the end of the biennium. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends HB 5044 be amended by the Dash 1 Amendment and be reported out do pass as amended.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Committee members, Senator Johnson and Representative Huffman and I participated in a task force looking at funding for the Department of Forestry for the last year, and we got a good explanation of the wildlife insurance policy, and I support that. I hope that we understand that that's a good investment for those terrible fire seasons that could happen this year.
Okay. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Not to put myself at odds with anyone, but I remain concerned about catastrophic fires, as we all are, I'm sure. But I'm also concerned about the risk that this puts on the general fund. And I think that we need to be thinking into the future and looking at the severance tax to help us potentially create a pool or a self-insurance type of pool to fight catastrophic fire in the future. And maybe it could do a few other things like provide subsidies for wood pellets or something like that. But I am extremely concerned about catastrophic fire in the future, and I know we have a lot of issues around our forest practices, but I really think the state should be looking at some way to protect our general fund by creating a self-insurance fund through the severance tax to help fight forest fires in the future. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
I wasn't going to say anything about this, but the prior conversation motivates me to make the observation that I, too, am worried about catastrophic fire. But I think it's imperative that the agency remember that their prime function is a firefighting agency. They've gotten lost over time. And when they prioritize fixing that old building, it's a lovely old building, and I think we all think it's a terrific part of our archive of Oregon. But when that's prioritized over firefighters, I start to have a giant problem. And I think our principal obligation as legislators is not to let the place burn down on our watch. I would hope that the agency would feel the same way and would prioritize firefighting.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Before I open the next work session, I just wanted to make two quick announcements. One, you may have noted that the Department of Corrections budget was pulled from this agenda. That is not due to any issue with that budget, out of courtesy to the director of the Department of Corrections who wanted to be here in case questions arose and could not be here today. It will just be on the next full agenda. And also, Representative Smith is actually excused for this meeting. So with that, I will go on to the next work session, open a work session, SB 5534, Public Employees Retirement System. Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Good bill should pass. He learns quickly, this one.
SB 5534 is the budget bill for the administrative agency that oversees public employees' retirement system, or PERS. PERS administers retirement plans that cover most of Oregon's public employees. It also administers self-paid health care plans for qualified retirees. The General Government Subcommittee approved a total budget of $11.1 billion other funds. $11 billion of the total is for benefit payments to retirees. The administrative budget total totals an additional $1.101 million and is 6.7% reduction from the 2015-17 legislative approved budget. The budget includes 372 positions for 371.37 FTEs. The budget includes an agency request reorganization plan, funding for development and implementation of cybersecurity programs, disaster recovery programs, business continual programs, and disaster recovery warm sites, and funding for individual account program information technology projects. The budget also transferred two information technology positions to the Department of Administrative Services and eliminates six vacant positions. The budget reports includes four budget notes. Two are relating to development and implementation of cyber security programs, disaster recovery programs, business continue programs, and a disaster recovery warm site. One is related to reporting on the individual account program information technology project. The final budget note is related to the completion of a comprehensive state data center using user analysis. The subcommittee approved the agency key performance measures and targets. The General Government Subcommittee recommends SB 5534 be amended by the dash one amendment and reported out due pass as amended. Thank you.
Yeah. Discussion on the motion before the committee, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Two quick questions of the good senator or the staff. Is the IT system off the shelf, and what is the ratio of supervisors to workers, management to supervisors?
If I may have that lifeline, I have Mr. John Wardham here. He's come prepared.
That wasn't?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, John Borden for the from the Legislative Fiscal Office. I will speak about the supervisory ratio. I will confirm this, but it should fall within the 11-to-1 ratio as required, and the agency has been consistently within that requirement over time. And if I may, Mr. Co-Chair, Mr. Cummings will speak to the other issue.
Mr. Cummings.
For the record, I'm Bob Cummings. I'm with the LFO. I assume that the application we're talking about is IAP?
Yes, individual account.
Okay. The individual account program project's purpose is to to basically enforce the processing that is done by IAP and the private sector. It's been broken into three phases, and it's been being worked on for probably the last 3 years. Phase one and two have been satisfactorily completed, and the agencies followed the stage gate process appropriately. Stage three, they're ready to begin on, and we've recommended funding that'll take us through 2017. But we have some concerns because the prime contractor and vendor is not available, and so we have to redo that. We got some concerns on scope, et cetera. The product itself is from my understanding, not a COTS, although it may be being built
in
pieces. I'm sorry, commercial off-the-shelf product. It's not some product that we just brought in and can just run. It is a product that's been built basically from scratch, but certainly using the design components from a design perspective of the existing system that's off-site, the same types of capabilities. So
For the record, it is not a COTS product. It is being built from scratch, and it's scheduled to be completed, I believe, by the end of 2018.
Follow up, Mr. Koch.
Yes, Representative Wisdom.
Are we on schedule as far as cost?
Co-chairs, Representative Wisnett, the project is basically on schedule at the moment, and certainly for the amount of money that's being asked, they're on schedule as far as the spending goes. The question of whether it will be completed on time is dependent upon the scope changes that are being identified and the timing of getting a qualified contractor on board, etc. I have no reason at this point to believe that it will not be completed on schedule, but we won't know that for sure until they come in and basically rescope it and reschedule it and bring the contractor on board.
Thank you.
And if I may, Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes.
Just as additional clarification on that particular point, the budget includes a very conservative allocation for this particular project, half of the requested budget and half of the requested FTE. So the agency will, as well as a budget note on reporting. So the intent is to monitor the closeout of this final phase of the project very closely, given the concerns that have been noted. And so the agency will have to come back to the legislative session in 2018 for additional resources if needed. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay. Additional discussion. Objections to the motion before the committee. Please note Senator Girod, Senator Thompson. Motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session, SB 5540, Department of Transportation, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, colleagues. Senate Bill 5540 is the budget bill for the Oregon Department of Transportation. The department's mission is to provide a safe, efficient transportation system that supports economic opportunity and livable communities in Oregon. ODOT develops highways, roads, and bridges, coordinates rail and public transportation services, designs bicycle and pedestrian paths, manages transportation safety programs, conducts driver and vehicle licensing, and regulates motor carriers. The Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends a total biennial budget of $3.8 billion, with $24.9 million general fund, $120.6 million lottery funds, $3.5 billion other funds, $105.9 million federal funds, $18.1 million other funds non-limited, and $21.6 million federal funds non-limited. This budget includes 4,482 positions and 4,386 FTE. The subcommittee approved funding for the DMV to proceed with its service transformation project, which will replace an old information technology systems and business processes at a cost of $27 million in the 17-19 biennium. The subcommittee also approved funding for the Seniors and Disabled Transit System and for the Amtrak Cascades Rail Service for the 17-19 biennium. Your Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5540 be amended by the Dash 2 amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Any discussion of the motion before the committee? Yes, Representative Wisdom.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Senator, the debt service on the state radio, how many more years are we going to have to pay?
I'm going to ask Mr. Joe Levitt from the professional staff at LFO to come forward.
Thank you.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Yes, sir.
Please identify.
Hi, sorry. Gregory Jolivet with the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Section 2, you say the debt service on the state radio project is $29-plus million. Dollars. When I get my mortgage payment, I look at, see, I wonder how much more I owe. How many more years are we going to be paying $29 million, or what's?
I say 16 years.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Wisnett, I don't have that exact answer for you. It's about 15 to 20 years,
20 years
remaining.
Wow.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
I'm going to take a stab at this, and Senator Johnson, I was going to say 14 to 15 years because I think we sold the bonds in 2013. We approved the state radio in 11. And so if it was 20 years, you subtract that. So it'd be around the 15-year mark.
Probably in that neighborhood, yeah.
Mr. Kocher, may I make a comment?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Kocher. I probably was part of the decision. I probably voted for it, but a radio system in 20 years is going to be completely outdated in 10 years or 5 years. I know that's we're going in debt for a longer time than the system should be effective. Hope we'll do better. Like I said, I probably voted for it. Thank you.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Please note Representative Start, Representative McLean, Representative Wisnett. Motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. SB 5542, Water Resources Department. Senator Girod.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5542 is the budget bill for the Water Resources Department. The all funds budget is $75,508,274, which represents a 2.4% reduction from current service level. The reduction is primarily accounted for by the elimination of $2.48 million in other funds expenditure limitations for debt service that was erroneously included in the current service level for bonds that were not issued during the 2015-17 biennium, and general fund reductions to conform to the co-chair's budget framework. Anticipated fee revenues resulting from fee changes included in House Bill 2295 are recognized in the budget. Additionally, a revenue transfer from the Department of State Lands providing funding for a shared service position at Water Resources is included. Lottery funds in the budget are exclusively for debt service. The budget carries forward $26 million in other funds expenditure limitations for lottery bonds funded programs, including basin studies for the Willamette and Deschutes River basins, water supply development grants and loans, feasibility study grants and loans, place-based integrated water resource strategy grants and technical assistance, Umatilla water supply project, and Mosier Creek area water well remediation. The budget authorized the establishment of a permanent dam safety engineer position that was limited duration in 2015-17 biennium and authorizes the establishment of 5 positions in Umatilla County funded from county and federal revenues via contract. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5542 be amended by the Dash 1 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I'll say this again when we get to 2295, the fee bill for water resources. Out of an abundance of caution, my husband and I own property in Columbia County that has a dam that is subject to inspection and fees.
Additional discussion. Yes.
Is this the Senator agency Johnson. That has the drought management position in it?
Possible.
I think you might pass that. I was just wondering what he's doing. That person's doing this year. It's all the snow and rain.
Getting ready for next year.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes. Any additional questions? Any objections to the motion? Please note, Representative Wisner. No others. And Representative Stark. Motion carries. I will move on to SB 93. I won't read the entire title, but we'll go to Senator Hansel.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 93 increases to $1 million the amount that can be credited to the Workers' Memorial Scholarship Account from civil penalties recovered for violations of workplace safety and health violations. The current cap is $250,000 and has not been changed since 1993. Interest from the Workers' Memorial Scholarship Account is dedicated to educational scholarships for the spouses and children of workers who are killed on the job or who have received a permanent total disability award from the injury on the job. The proposed increase in the size of the amount will allow the Department of Consumer and Business Services to increase the value of the scholarships awarded. There is no fiscal impact to the bill as the change does not impact agency operating costs. Civil penalties recovered in excess of the cap are deposited into the premium assessment operating account, which supports Oregon OSHA and Workers' Compensation Division. The increase in the amount awarded to the scholarship account will not negatively impact workplace safety and health programs at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends SB 93 be reported out due pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open in work session SB 98 relating to residential mortgage lenders servicers. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 98 creates a program at the Department of Consumer and Business Services to regulate non-depository, non-governmental, third-party residential mortgage loan servicers. Though DCBS does not currently regulate these entities, it received almost 200 complaints regarding mortgage loan servicer practices in 2015. This bill gives DCBS examination, investigation, and enforcement authority, as well as the authority to set license and renewal fees by rule. DCBS expects to hire a financial examiner, too, to process license applications, perform compliance examinations, and receive and investigate complaints. Costs for the program will be covered by fees charged to the servicers. Any civil penalties collected for violations are to be deposited into the general fund. Your Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 98 be amended by the A5 amendment and reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Please note Representative Stark. Motion carries. Open a work session on SB 140 relating to state financial administration, Measure 96 implementation. Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 140 establishes statutory provisions to implement ballot Measure 96. In last November's general election, voters approved ballot Measure 96, which amended the state constitution to dedicate 1.5% of net lottery proceeds to providing services for the benefit of veterans. Senate Bill 140 creates new state accounts needed to implement the measure and to allow the dedicated lottery funds to support veterans programs. The bill requires state agencies to hold Measure 96 lottery funds in separate accounts that are only restricted to veteran programs. It establishes the Veterans Service Fund, as the constitutional amendment requires, and directs the Department of Administrative Services to deposit 1.5% of net lottery proceeds into this fund. Once deposited, the monies are restricted to funding veterans programs. This bill itself does not provide Measure 96 monies to any state programs. Each biennium, the legislature will allocate monies from the Veterans Service Fund to specific agencies for specific veterans programs. Senate Bill 140 establishes funds to support allocations to the Department of Veterans Affairs and to the Housing and Community Services Department. Additional agency accounts may be established in the future. Your Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 140 be amended by the -1 amendment and reported out due pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee? Seeing none. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing none. Motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session, SB 201, relating to salary of employees of universities with the governing board under the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 201 is a narrowly defined revision to the Public Employees Retirement System statutes. A small group of public university employees hired on or after August the 29th, 2003, and working out of state have had Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan contributions made on their behalf by universities. These payments were based on the employees' total compensation. Universities recently learned that under this PERS retirement plan that the employee salary, not taxable in Oregon, is ineligible for determining PERS contributions and benefits. This measure allows the select employees' total compensation to be considered Oregon taxable income for the purpose of PERS benefits. Going forward, employees hired on or after January the 1st, 2017, are notified that only compensation taxable in Oregon will count for PERS benefit purposes. Eligible employees are given the option to participate in a non-PERS optional retirement plan or default into PERS. The General Government Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 201 be reported out, do pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Senator Jawad.
I have a question for the carrier. And does this add to the PERS liability or not?
I want to get a quite precise answer, so I'm going to ask the professional staff to come forward. Mr. Borden.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, John Borden with the Legislative Fiscal Office. Senator, I don't believe it does. These are the quote-unquote Tier 3 folks, the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan individuals. And so the contributions that are made in their behalf are for their retirement plan. So if you'd like further clarification, Director Rodman is here, but that's my understanding. It's, again, a very narrow set of employees, about 68 individuals total. And the universities have been making their full required contributions for their retirement plans to PERS.
Any additional discussion? Thank you. Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Thank you. Close that work session. Open a work session. SB 214 relating to the eligibility of postdoctoral scholars for retirement benefits. Senator Manning.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Here's another good bill should pass. SB 214 is a narrowly defined revision of the Public Employees Retirement System statute. The measure established a definition of a postdoctoral scholar, clarification for public universities and the Oregon Health and Science University, which is not eligible to become a member of the Public Employees Retirement System. Instead, an alternative retirement benefit is established under the optional retirement plan. The measure provides an irrevocable option for a postdoctoral scholar to re-elect to become a PERS member or continue participating in an optional retirement plan upon being hired by a public university, but only if hired as a tenure-track faculty position or researcher. The measure is prospective and only applies to postdoctoral scholars on or after the effective date of the measure. General Government Subcommittee recommends SB 214 be amended by the -2 amendment and be reported out, do pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Kutcher. Senator, I'm sorry, but you... Do they get into PERS or do they not get in PERS? I misread this. I thought it was saying they could not get in PERS.
That's correct.
They will not be in PERS.
Yes.
Okay, I apologize. I'm good. Yeah,
it's optional.
No, it's the option.
Yeah. Please,
Mr. Co-Chair, John Borden with the Legislative Fiscal Office, members of the committee and representative. Right now, they will have one irrevocable option to go return to PERS if they finish their postdoctoral scholar studies and are hired as a academic or a researcher. So under that scenario, they would have their choice to either continue in the optional plan, which most academics do because of the portability of that, to allow them to work, you know, in go between states for academic appointments, or if they choose, they would go into PERS and stop being in the optional plan, but they could only make that decision once.
Did that clarify?
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes.
And not for John. Committee members, our committee, our subcommittee on education, looked at cost drivers of education. The number one cost driver is salaries of $100 million for a budget for salary. PERS was over $50 million as a cost driver, and health care was over $39 million. With those sort of numbers and cost drivers, we're never going to be able to reduce or stop the increased cost of higher education, which is one of the main topics we come into this session trying to address. And I don't know, I'm sorry, I still don't know what the cost or the possibility of how this bill affects the PERS unfunded obligation or the salary to the universities. Okay. So I will probably be
Okay. Before I go to Representative Williamson, who's asking, I'll try to clarify. The universities have requested this so that for postdoctoral people that come in, who usually are only there 2 or 3 years, that they will not put them on PERS because they would never vest in PERS. Mm-hmm. And so they will have the option to participate in the optional retirement program, which is like a 401k system.
Thank you. I see the lights are.
Yes. Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. You clarified the point I was going to make about when they're a postdoc, and then when they start at the university, they're treated as a brand new university employee,
right,
then getting whatever the benefit package of a brand new university employee is on the day they start as a full-time professor or researcher. But as postdoc, they get op serves, so it's portable, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And many of the postdocs will never
right,
be hired by the university as a researcher. That's not their intent,
right,
being a postdoc. They're intending to hopefully find a faculty position somewhere. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, not always in Oregon.
Right. I just wanted to make sure that was my understanding.
Or a research position. Any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session, open a work session. SB 254 relating to debt collections owed to the state. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, colleagues. Senate Bill 254 requires financial institutions to participate in a data match program with the Department of Revenue. Under this program, financial institutions compare a list of delinquent debtors with the names of account holders. If a match is found, DOR is notified and may pursue garnishment against the account. The bill also allows the Department of Justice to share new hire information with the Department of Revenue to facilitate wage garnishments. For the data match program, financial institutions will charge a fee of up to $2,500 for startup costs and $150 per quarter thereafter. These fees will be added proportionately to debtor accounts to reimburse the department. The Legislative Revenue Office estimates an increase in successful garnishments of 6% for the first year and up to 12% by the third year of implementation. The department can manage this program with existing staff. Your General Government Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 254 be reported out, do pass. This one finds us money, colleagues.
Yeah. Any discussion of the bill? Any objections to the bill? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session, open a work session. SB 374 relating to Real ID, Senator Hanselman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Federal Real ID Act of 2005 established national security standards for the state driver's license and identification cards. States are not required to comply, and there is no monetary penalty. But residents of states that do not meet the standards are not able to use their standard identification for federal purposes, such as entry into federal facilities or boarding commercial aircraft. As of October 10, 2015, military bases and federal facilities that require identification to gain access only accept state-issued identification cards from Real ID compliant states and states with an extension. Beginning January 22, 2018, the Federal Transportation Security Administration will only accept state-issued identification from Real ID compliant states and states with an extension. Until recently, Oregon has operated under an extension that has spared residents the inconvenience of having to supply other acceptable forms of identification. However, the extension has ended, and further extensions are in jeopardy unless Oregon can demonstrate a serious and significant effort to achieve full implementation of the Real ID Act. Senate Bill 374 is a critical step in that direction. The measure conforms existing statute to the Federal ID Act of 2005. Under the bill, the program is optional, and DMV would offer two types of identification cards and driver's license, one being the standard cards that are available today, and the other being real ID compliant cards, which individuals could use to board commercial aircraft and access other federal facilities. The department anticipates that real ID compliant cards will be available July 1, 2020 at the earliest. In the 2017-19 biennium, the bill is anticipated to have a minimal fiscal impact on the Department of Transportation. The 2019-21 biennium implementation costs are estimated to be at $579,023. Fees for the issuance of the real ID cards will be set to a level to cover the cost of issuance. The Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 374 be reported out, do pass.
Discussion. Senator Johnson.
I should know the answer to this because I sat through the committee hearings, but I don't, and perhaps DMV could answer this. If the real ID compliant cards are not available by selection for Oregonians to get until 2020, and the Department of Homeland Security at the federal level cracks down and could crack down soon, what do we do between 2017 and 2020? I'm particularly thinking of Senator Hansel and people entering military reservations or, frankly, getting on a plane.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Devlin, Chair Nathanson, and Senator Johnson. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Two possibilities there, Senator. One is that Oregon could continue to get extensions from the federal government. Key to that would be passage of this bill. In that case, the Homeland Security, Secretary of Homeland Security would continue to issue extensions, and then Oregonians could continue to use their standard Oregon driver license or ID card to enter federal facilities and to board planes. If we were not granted an extension, then Oregonians are left with the option of coming up with other identifications that are acceptable at military bases, nuclear facilities, and such. Passports, passport cards to get on a plane, or other identification that TSA accepts.
Thank you.
Senator Gerard.
Yes, colleague. Our committee heard this bill initially, and I have two problems with it. The first is that it actually takes more ID to get a driver's license than it does a passport. And number two, this is a federal mandate that had no money behind it. So for those two reasons, I'll be a no.
Representative Williamson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It was my understanding that the current identification requirements for driver's license in Oregon, the documents you have to bring to get your driver's license don't change under the Real ID Act. It's whether or not the DMV takes copies of them. Is that right? So we don't change. The pony says having to supply other acceptable forms of ID, but I thought the standard was already set for the kinds of identification we need to provide to get our driver's license. It's just whether or not the Department of Motor Vehicles has to retain a copy of that.
Again, for the record.
Co-Chair Devlin, for the record, my name is Tom McClellan, DMV Administrator. Representative Williamson, today, if you are applying for an original driver's license or an ID card, there is a set of documents you need to present to us for acceptance one time. And we've been through a full 8-year cycle of that process. With a Real ID Act card, that were a compliant card, we would require you to resubmit those documents so we could make the copies. So that's where the extra documentation is required. If you choose not to apply for a compliant card, you do not have to bring birth certificate or passport, Social Security card,
so you
evidence.
Would just renew.
Right. That's the difference. In order for us to make the copies, we need to see the documents again. That's the key point.
I get that. It just doesn't change the initial level of documentation when you get a driver's license.
That is true.
Okay.
Any additional discussion? Yes. Representative Senator Hanson.
I would say that if we do nothing, then the axe certainly will fall, and our citizens will not be allowed to board commercial airlines using driver's license. The second thing that's built into this, I want to make it's really clear, and that is it's optional. If a person doesn't want it, they don't have to get it. It's similar, I would suspect, to a vanity plate. If you want a vanity plate, you pay a little extra for it. And you'll do the same for a real ID driver's license. Basically, what we're doing is providing the citizens an option that they would not have if we don't pass this bill in order to do the different things that the real ID will allow them to do.
Any additional discussion? Objections to the motion before the committee? Senator Girod. Motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session relating to posting at roadside rest areas informational materials on human traffic. Senator Hansel.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 375 seeks to raise awareness of human trafficking by posting informational material in bathroom stalls at roadside rest areas throughout the state. To this end, the bill sets up a human trafficking awareness fund in both the Department of Transportation and the State Parks and Recreation Department, authorizes both agencies to receive gifts and grants to be deposited into the newly established funds to cover any costs related to the posting of information on human trafficking, and establishes standards related to the type of information that can be posted. For example, all materials must include telephone hotline numbers to seek help or report unlawful activity, a hotline text messaging number, and be available in multiple languages. Under Senate Bill 375, nonprofit organizations that supply copies of informational materials for distribution in rest areas must do so at no cost to the state. The bill is anticipated to have a minimal fiscal impact. The Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 375 be reported out due pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session. SB 860 relating to mental health treatment providers. Senator Hansel.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 860 requires the Department of Consumer and Business Services to conduct examinations of health insurance carriers to review reimbursement parity and utilization management procedures for behavioral mental health providers as compared to medical providers and mental health providers with prescribed privileges, with prescribing privileges. The bill directs DCBS to adopt rules based on the results of the examinations to ensure mental health parity and network adequacy statutes are fully implemented. DCBS is also directed to report to the legislature with their findings by September 1, 2019. The DCBS does not currently conduct examinations such as the one required in this bill. The agency will issue a contract to obtain the correct expertise. The cost to examine 12 carriers is between $33,500 and $50,000 per examination. Consistent with current practice, subject insurance carriers will reimburse DCBS for the cost of the examination. The Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 860 be amended by the -6 amendments and reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none. Senator Girod. Senator Girod. Oh, objection. Just an objection.
I object.
Okay. Long meeting. Motion carries. Okay. Please note Senator Girod voted no. Close out work session, open a work session, HB 2238 relating to crime. Senator Frederick.
Mr. Co-Chair, HB 2238 establishes a 13-member task force on public safety and directs it to study security release in Oregon, the impact of criminal fines and fees, and the implementation of the Justice Reinvestment Program. Additionally, the measure directs the Criminal Justice Commission to prepare a racial and ethnic impact statements on legislation and ballot measures related to crime, and transfers the obligation to produce racial and ethnic impact statements on legislation and ballot measures related to human services to the Department of Human Services until January 2, 2018. The measure is anticipated to have a minimal fiscal impact on the Judicial Department,
the Department of Corrections, and the Criminal Justice Commission, and to have no fiscal impact on other state agencies or city and county public safety partners. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2238 be reported out, do pass.
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. HB 2295, Water Resources Department Services, Senator Frederick.
And on the other area, House Bill 2295 increases certain fees and fee schedules for the Water Resources Department. The bill also modifies a provision of law that would have otherwise reverted those fees back to their 2009 rates to conform with the increase in fees. The fees addressed in the bill currently provide approximately $2.9 million of the $8.67 million in total fee revenue generated by the Water Resources Department. The additional revenue anticipated due to the fee increases in the measure total $471,508, an increase in total fee revenue of 5.4%. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2295 be reported out, do pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Senator Johnson.
I am subject to these fees. My husband and I own a dam.
Okay. Bonneville?
Yeah, right.
Well, they want to sell it to a private investor.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The fee increase, it says, is like 16.3%, and that kind of... So I'm going to be a no just to start out. That's a pretty high number. But if you look back at 2009, during the recession, I think this body increased fees absorbently back in 2009. Just for an example, I'm giving my best Doug Whitsitt impersonation. back in appropriated water for a single use, it raised 40%. Base fee went from 400 to 900, which was 125% increase in that fee. We had a new fee that year of $300 for applications, and that was supposed to sunset in 4 years. So in 2013, we continued those and they raised them again. So, and in 2013, they were supposed to sunset. So now it's 2017. And we're not sunsetting them. We're adding another 16% on top of all of those. So I'll be a no. Thanks.
Any additional discussion? Yes, Representative McLean. I can see it in your eyes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to join my colleague, Senator Thompson, a man of the people who we all admire, in voting no on this bill.
No. Jack, are you going to be a yes? And don't have a man in here. Yes.
For
yesterday.
2238.
I think she'll say okay. Any additional discussion? Yes.
No, not on this bill. Sorry. Finished.
Okay. Mr. Rocco, will you please call the roll?
Representative Wisnett?
No.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative McLean?
No.
Representative Williamson?
Yes.
Representative Gumber?
Aye.
Representative Smith Warner?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Co-Chair Nathanson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Aye.
Senator Hansel?
Aye.
Senator Roblin?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Aye.
Senator DeVore?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Winters?
Aye, aye, aye.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Close that. Motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. HB 2721 relating to road worker safety. Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. HB 2721 expands the crime of assault in the third degree to include physical injury to flaggers and highway workers performing official duties. The measure is anticipated to have a minimal fiscal impact to the Department of Corrections, Judicial Department, Public Defense Services Commission, and District Attorneys and their deputies. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2721 be amended by the dash one amendments and be reported out. Do pass as amended. I need to remind colleagues that we just recently had a very tragic accident on I-5. This bill, it came and we heard testimony from our workers, some of the workers from ODOT, who talked about not only, in the case of the one on I-5 that was hit and run, but they actually are experiencing individuals getting out of their cars and assaulting workers. So, this is a very important piece of legislation, and I urge your all support.
Any additional discussion? Representative McLean.
Thank you, Senator. It's my pleasure to get to vote for this today. My constituent, Ron Davis, died 2 days ago. He was the one of the men, two men injured grievously. And what nobody can understand was the cause of an accident other than inattention. And, he was doing work on a public project, working for Knife River. So Ron lives down the road. For me, his wife, Sheila, is left behind. He was 57 years old. And to have to see such tragedy happen again in our state baffles me. I am pleased that we're trying to correct this, but as I've urged the House, and I certainly would urge my colleagues in the Senate, please put in your newsletters to have people be aware that we have construction workers who are at risk. Slow down and pay attention. And I do want to publicly thank the governor for calling Sheila Davis and giving on behalf of our state, our thoughts and prayers with regard once hearing that Ron had died, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. HB 3355 relating to prescribing psychologist Senator Smith Warner.
Well, thank you, Representative Devlin. Colleagues, House Bill 3355 authorizes the Board of Psychologist Examiners to issue either full or conditional certificates permitting licensed psychologists with certain experience and education to prescribe drugs that are used in mental health treatment, excluding opiate-based narcotics. A certificate of prescriptive authority must be renewed every 2 years. Psychologists holding a conditional certificate of prescribing authority may only prescribe a drug if a licensed prescribing physician or prescribing nurse practitioner approves the prescription in writing. In addition, the bill establishes the 9-member Committee on Prescribing Psychologists within the Board of Psychologist Examiners to advise the Board on this prescriptive authority certificate program. The bill allows the Board to impose fees to cover the associated costs. The bill includes a $55,762 other funds limitation for the Board of Psychologist Examiners to fund startup costs for developing the certificate program. The Education Committee recommends House Bill 3355 be amended by the dash A-17 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion of the motion before the committee? Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. Colleagues, this bill puts me in a really tough position at this point. And I would just say I've been working on this issue since 2007, starting on a work group chaired by then freshman Representative Tina Kotek. And had my name on this bill as a chief sponsor because I believe that there is a way forward for psychologists to do prescribing that would be effective, safe, and would improve access. However, I got into very detailed research on the training that's outlined in this bill and got to a point where I didn't have confidence that the training as documented in the bill and recommended in the bill would be sufficient to ensure safety. And because of that, I very reluctantly took my name off the bill, and I'll be a no on this bill. This is a very tough place for me to be. It's the third time in my career as a legislator that I've made a commitment to vote a certain way and then had to change my mind, and I don't like doing it. So I just wanted to, for those of you who have been supportive in the past, let you know why I'm a no now on the bill.
Senator Fred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, I had to write this down a bit so that I could make sure that I was clear about how I feel about some things. My biggest issue regarding HB 3355 is capacity. We do not have enough mental health professionals for the need we have in our state. That is clear as we are ranked lowest in the country for mental health support. We have extraordinary folks who are trying to keep up with the demands. They cannot. That includes trained psychologists. It also includes psychiatrists and others. We need both, but we need more of both. I see this bill as a bridge. It may create a bridge for my family members who often have to wait weeks or months to see a professional who can identify whether their medication is helping them or hurting them. Dealing with side effects that remain permanent like tardive dyskinesia or adjustments in dosage. Right now, they rely on an overwhelmed schedule of specific medically trained professionals, and they don't have time to get to see those folks. Can we effectively expand that group to help provide more options? I hope so. I see the training proposed as going in the right direction. If it is not enough, then I hope the board that is created will identify where it is deficient and take action. I see the residency component as another plus in this bill, a supervised program with hands-on interaction providing a personal, experiential knowledge of the drugs and treatments available and the way real clients react to them. I see the fact that this requires a hospital or clinic to be part of any certified practitioner as another plus for this plan. I've not been convinced that this approach with safeguards in place will result in a drop in quality of care. I've been told that there are other paths to increasing the capacity, physician's assistants, and perhaps recruiting psychologists to become physician assistants, greater access via technology, interactive phone lines. Good. Let's have all of these things working. I plan to vote for this bill. I also plan to follow carefully how well this plan is instituted. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Respectfully, and I know that you have personal experience in this issue area, but respectfully, in our attempt to create more providers, we shouldn't compromise safety. I wish to be associated with Dr. Steiner Hayward's comments, and I will vote no on this. I would remind the committee that this concept has come forward in previous sessions and was vetoed by the governor. I think this is a dangerous path to go down, and believe that expanding these privileges is a compromise to safety.
Okay. I have Representative Stark, then I have Senator Steiner Hayward, and do I have?
I want to express agreement with Senator Frederick's well-articulated statements, much more articulate than I can do. You know, the ability to expand quality access, I think, is important. I watch this in my wife's professional practice, where the number of times where it's time for one of her clients to receive some sort of, medical help on these issues, and where she'll try to refer someone out and sometimes wait months in order for them to have access to the appropriate person. And then when all is said and done, they have one, maybe two appointments then to come back to her, where she's the one who's then monitoring them. So I'm in huge agreement with the idea of making sure that these psychologists have the appropriate training to expand that access. So I'm pleased that we're moving forward with this. I appreciate all those who have worked on it, Representative Kinnemer, who's worked so long and hard on this. So I'm going to eagerly support this today.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you. Just one other point I want to make. I hope nobody thinks that this is a scope of practice issue. I believe that I have voted yes on every single expansion of scope of practice bill since I came to the legislature, sometimes to the dismay of my colleagues in medicine. So, and as I said, I supported this bill initially. So I just want to be clear that this is not a turf issue. This is simply a patient safety issue from my perspective. And I'm not saying that those who vote in favor of it are being cavalier with patient safety. I'm just saying that's my perspective.
Okay. Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out two things. I also wanted to acknowledge that we did adopt an amendment in the sub about one of the training requirements. That was an amendment from Senator Steiner Hayward, and so I did want to acknowledge that we had removed one of the potential qualifications that I think had been part of your initial concern, and that indeed was removed from this.
Yes.
And also, there was discussion in the hearing about the difference between this bill and the one that was vetoed. And that the changes since that version were more provider oversight, more collaboration, and more specific training and education requirements that are in this bill that were not in the one that was vetoed. So I just wanted to make that clear for the record.
I have Senator DeBoer. I have Senator DeBoer, Senator Roblin, and then Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As many of you are aware, that the mental health issues are growing rapidly. I have strong comments from Southern Oregon that the wait time for prescriptions and to see a mental health person are increasing rapidly. And I have strong support from Southern Oregon to pass this bill. Many calls from the medical profession. So I will be a yes, and I certainly respect the arguments brought forth. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to represent what Senator DeBoer just said and Senator Frederick, but more importantly, when we had the hearing in the Education Committee, the issue was brought up about safety. It continues to be brought up. I asked questions, found out that Louisiana has had this bill for a while. There have not been indications with respect to lawsuits or others about safety. There was one case apparently a number of years ago, but it was really about not coordinating like they should have. It really wasn't about the kinds of things that are in this bill that we've actually made even safer. The problem that I have, having had family and others who were also have been affected by this, is that you get your prescription, and then it really is an individual reaction to that prescription that people watch and monitor very closely, nurses and others. It's hard to get back to the psychiatrist to get things changed, whereas if you have psychologists who do more of that, interacting with their patients for a longer time because of the mental health issues, and they can see that happening, they recognize their patients, I believe that if done right, this can make it safer. To adjust medications at appropriate times. And I know from the rural area, the same expectation you've heard from other people from the rural areas, that access is exceedingly important. And the other thing I would really stress is that in all of these professions, whether it be the psychiatrists, the doctors, the nurses, and the psychologists, one of their biggest issues that they do in all of their training is to recognize when they're getting out of their scope and depth to get a hold of other people. This bill encourages that and makes sure that in those hospital places and others, you are getting the interaction with the other people who you need to have to make better decisions over the long haul. So I will be a yes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I was on the subcommittee that heard this too, and everything's been said that I'm supporting the bill and about the availability and the demand and need and all that. But to repeat a little bit of what Senator Roblin talked about, a professor came up in committee and said that there's been no documentation of drugs being bad prescribed or any bad outcome from that. And his comment was, if there was, it would have been out there. So I think that was an important part for me to hear. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. When we heard this bill before the Education Subcommittee, one of the issues that came up was the issue of whether or not nurse practitioners should be able to participate. You have to understand, those of us from urban areas have to understand, that in rural areas, many times, nurse practitioners are the primary providers, and so giving them some authority here in terms of dispensation of pharmaceuticals in rural areas in particular is going to be critical.
Any additional discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Rocco, will you call the roll?
Representative Wisnant?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative McLean?
Yes.
Representative Williamson?
Yes.
Representative Gomberg?
Yes.
Representative Smith-Warner?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Co-Chair Nathan?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Gerard.
Aye.
Senator Thompson.
No.
Senator Steiner Haber.
No.
Senator Hansen.
Aye.
Senator Roblin.
Aye.
Senator Frederick.
Yes.
Senator Manning.
Aye.
Senator DeBoer.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Winters.
No.
Co-Vice Chair Johnson.
No.
Co-Chair Devlin.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion passes.
Motion carries. Close that work session. Open a work session. Federal grant application. Department of Geology and Mineral Industry. Senator Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On June 13th, the Natural Resource Subcommittee recommended approval of the submission of a federal grant application from the Department of Geology and Mineral Industry to the U.S. Geographic Survey in the amount of $191,505 for a 3D elevation program initiative. The department is proposing the use of this grant opportunity to collect data for the Oregon LIDAR Consortium Silver Creek Subbasin Project, which will provide comprehensive mapping of 751 square miles of the Harney Basin in parts of Crook and Harney counties. The grant requires a match. However, the match is being provided by two other Oregon LIDAR Consortium members. The department does not require additional position authority or expenditure limitations for this grant. The final grant proposals are due in September, and awards are anticipated to be announced later this year or early next year. The Natural Resource Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discuss the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session. Department Administrative Services, Article 11G, Bond Refunding. Senator Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On June 9th, the Capital Construction Subcommittee recommended acknowledging receipt of a report from the Department of Administrative Services on the state's Article 11G General Obligation Bond Debt Service Saving as a result of refinancing. ORS 286A.160 sub 3 requires the Department of Administrative Services to report the amount of incurred expenses and debt service savings related to the issuance of refunding bonds to the Joint Committee of Ways and Means. On May 3, 2017, DAS and the State Treasurer completed the sale of 2017 Series J and L refunding Article 11G bonds. Proceeds for the sale were used to refinance qualifying Article 11G general obligation bonds that had been previously issued. An overall net present value savings of 8.18% of the refunding bonds proceeds was achieved. The refunding result in statewide general fund debt service savings of $1,925,696 for the 2017 biennium and a total savings of $11,804,705 over the life of the bonds. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends approval.
Okay, discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries.
Without objection, request permission to be marked as voting yes on House Bill 2238, since I had to step out of the room.
Okay, I'll have a number of those, so we'll start with you. Senator Steinerhardt would like to change her vote on...
Record my vote.
Record your vote.
House Bill 2238.
How do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. Representative Stark would like to change his vote on SB 98. How do you vote?
Yes.
Without any objections?
No.
Senator Manning would like to vote on HB 2295. How do you vote?
Aye.
No objections?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Stark would like to record his votes on these bills on the agenda
today.
That was
in transportation.
That is actually 20 items.
Without objection?
You're going to owe people.
I apologize, colleagues. That's in transportation.
Representative Smith, how do you vote on 5003?
Aye.
How do you vote on HB 5019?
Can we just do it on block?
They're all yeses.
On block, please.
Is that permissible?
You bet.
It is.
It is.
Well,
Mr. Chair, I have no objections to that.
Yeah, but wait till the Secretary of the Senate comes in or the...
No, we don't need that.
I know, but they come in.
No one objects.
I'm going to do this in block, but you'll understand if it doesn't hold.
I understand.
Okay. Let me see, where are we? Okay, Representative Smith would like to vote in accordance with the order we did the agenda, which is the published order that we did the agenda, because we did not change. All of the bills between HB 5003 and HB 2295. I don't think you did. You
thank, you, thank you, sir. That's good. Aye. Thank you very much.
Colleagues, that concludes our agenda today. Please be aware that we will probably be meeting again before next Friday. Do we have a tentative date for that meeting?
Mr. Chair, we would just have to see what's queued up, but it likely would be either Tuesday or Wednesday.
With that, we're adjourned.